All right, diving in deep today, we're looking at a second Trump presidency, and specifically what it could mean for the war in Ukraine. We got some thought-provoking articles here from Robin Laird.
Yes.
A defense expert who, gotta say, kind of predicted some of this stuff way back, like in the 90s.
It is quite striking how Laird's work, even back then, sort of zeroed in on Ukraine as a real pressure point.
Right.
For the whole European order. He really understood, I think, the inherent instability of those former Soviet states, you know, caught between the West and Russia. And sadly, those predictions, well, we're seeing them play out in a very real and tragic way right now.
It's like he had a crystal ball or something.
Yeah.
And what gets me is how Laird doesn't sugarcoat anything about the current situation.
He sees
the Ukrainians' bravery.
Absolutely.
Tenacity. But he's also, you know, realistic
about
the sheer scale of what they're up against.
Yes.
They're facing a much larger adversary. And from Laird's view, the West's strategy seems, well, a bit muddled.
Yeah, he actually draws a pretty sobering comparison to the American Civil War.
Oh.
Laird talks about, you know, visiting those battlefields and just being struck by the sheer scale of the casualties. It's this reminder that this conflict, it has the potential to drag on, and the human cost could be, well, horrifying.
It's a chilling thought, for sure. And it makes those images we've all seen, you know, of the devastation in Ukraine all the more impactful. Laird even mentions a Wall Street Journal video. Shows the ruined cities, the toll on people's lives.
Yeah.
We won't show it here, of course. But even without seeing the footage, it's hard not to feel the weight of what's at stake.
But Laird also points to something unexpected, I think. Amidst all this tragedy, Putin's actually taken some pretty significant hits on the international stage.
He has, and these aren't just symbolic losses either. When those relationships break down, like the ones he had with, say, Merkel and Macron, it has real strategic consequences.
Yeah. I mean, these are relationships that, to some degree, helped manage the tensions, prevented things from, you know, really boiling over. Now those channels of communication, they're essentially gone.
And it's not just those major powers either. Laird points out how the Nordic countries, once relatively neutral, are now firmly in the NATO camp. And they're really bolstering their defenses.
Mm.
It's a major shift in the European security landscape.
Absolutely. I mean, Putin's actions have kind of backfired in a way, haven't they? Made Europe more united, more determined to resist. And it's even forced him to turn to other authoritarian regimes for support.
So we're seeing this realignment of global power with long-term implications. It's like, I don't know, the pieces on a chessboard are being moved around and we're not sure what the new game's going to look like.
Exactly. And that brings us to the central question, really, of our deep dive today. How would a second Trump presidency, how might that shake up this already volatile situation? Laird argues that Trump 2.0, it's not the same as Trump 1.0. Things like Brexit failing, you know, that's changing politics in Europe, they've altered the whole landscape.
And one of the key things Laird brings up is this Vance peace plan. Can you walk us through that a bit?
Yeah.
It's causing quite a stir.
Right. So this plan, it's spearheaded by, well, Trump's vice president-elect, J.D. Vance. It proposes a pretty radical change from what we're seeing now. Russia would actually keep some of the territory it's taken. There'd be a demilitarized zone created in Ukraine. And maybe most controversial is that Europe would take the lead on guaranteeing Ukrainian security.
So basically a deal that forces Europe to step up and handle more of its own defense.
Yeah.
But it sounds like there are some pretty big concessions to Russia, too.
Yeah.
That's got to raise eyebrows, especially from, say, the Polish perspective, which is where Sulda's article comes in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Sulda doesn't hold back. He really voices those deep anxieties in Poland about appeasement, drawing on historical examples like the Budapest Memorandum.
Right. For those who need a refresher, that was when Ukraine gave up its nuclear arsenal in exchange for security guarantees from Russia, the U.S., and the U.K.
Exactly.
And those guarantees. Well, they didn't hold up so well when Russia went and annexed Crimea in 2014.
No, they did not. So from that Polish perspective, any deal that gives Putin territorial wins and relies on, you know, his promises for security, it's viewed with a lot of skepticism, to say the least.
It sounds like there's this real fear, right, that any concessions just embolden Putin.
Yeah.
Could lead to more aggression, maybe even putting NATO's eastern flank at risk.
Those are valid concerns, and Sulda makes that very clear. But to be fair, Laird does offer a counterargument. He suggests that the Vance plan, flaws and all, could actually have some, well, some unexpected benefits.
Okay, now I'm intrigued. What kind of upsides does he see?
Well, he argues that forcing Europe to take more responsibility for its own defense, it might actually be good in the long run, could lead to a more unified, more strategically coherent EU, especially with Germany's political scene being what it is right now. He even thinks it could be a chance for Macron to reassert French leadership on the world stage. But Laird also throws in another curveball, this concept of a headless crisis.
Headless crisis. That sounds ominous. What does he mean by that?
He's talking about this unprecedented situation we're in, a lame duck Biden administration potentially escalating things in Ukraine, while at the same time you have the incoming Trump team signaling a completely different approach.
So it's like we're on autopilot, but with two pilots fighting over the controls.
Yeah.
Sounds like a disaster waiting to happen.
Exactly. And to make matters worse, Laird brings up Paul Bracken, another expert in crisis management. And Bracken asks this chilling question. Will Putin use this moment, this uncertainty and potential weakness, to escalate, to try and lock in his gains before Trump even takes office?
That's a terrifying thought. So what are the chances this headless crisis actually leads to things getting worse? Is Putin really likely to make such a bold move?
Well, Laird points to something recent that's definitely raising red flags. Russia test-fired one of its new intermediate-range ballistic missiles.
IRBMs.
Yes, toward Ukraine. And these are weapons, their range puts all of Europe within striking distance.
So intermediate-range ballistic missile, for anyone who doesn't speak acronym,
right.
That's a significant escalation.
Yeah.
Reminds me of those Cold War tensions.
It does, doesn't it? It seems like a pretty clear signal that Putin's willing to flex his muscles, especially when he senses an opening.
Precisely. And this is where it gets even more complex, I think, because of how asymmetrical the situation is.
Yeah.
Russia, with its size, can deploy these IRBMs in ways Europe just can't. It creates a strategic imbalance that's very difficult to counter.
So we've got this volatile situation, a potential power vacuum, and this very real risk of miscalculation by everyone involved. Where do we go from here? What are the potential paths forward? Well, Laird does highlight one potential ray of hope, the role of the Nordic countries.
Those cool heads we were talking about.
Exactly. They've got experience dealing with Russia. They're boosting their defenses. And they could potentially, you know, act as mediators, lay the groundwork for some kind of future cooperation. But then Laird goes on to give this pretty stark warning about the UK's approach. And I gotta say, it's a bit confusing. They're bombing Russian territory, but at the same time, they're cutting defense spending. Seems counterproductive, to put it mildly.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to do two opposite things at once. What message does that send, and what could be the consequences?
It's a contradictory and potentially dangerous approach. It signals escalation on the one hand, but weakens their own capabilities on the other. This kind of inconsistency, it could embolden Russia, weaken Western unity, and make a peaceful resolution even harder to reach. It's a case study in what not to do in a situation this delicate. It's like every decision, every action, every word spoken in the next 60 days carries enormous weight. The consequences of miscalculation could be devastating.
It's a reminder that even seemingly small decisions can have a ripple effect in a situation like this.
A lot to unpack there, no doubt. I think what really worries me is, well, the potential for things to spiral. You know, we're talking nuclear armed powers, a proxy war, and now a presidential transition thrown into the mix. Any miscalculation, any impulsive move, the consequences could be catastrophic.
That's been on my mind, too, this sense that we're, I don't know, right on the edge of something really bad. It's unsettling. And speaking of unsettling, Laird makes this chilling comparison to the Vietnam War. Can you explain that a bit? What parallels does he see and why is it so concerning?
So Laird argues that what the Biden administration is doing now, you know, sending more weapons, upping the military aid, ratcheting up the rhetoric against Russia, it's a lot like the escalation strategy we saw in Vietnam, which of course didn't end well. The concern is that by fueling the conflict without a clear end goal, we risk prolonging things, you know, more bloodshed and potentially stumbling into a wider war.
So history repeating itself, but with even higher stakes this time. And that's where Putin's motivations, they become even more crucial, right? If he sees weakness or hesitation during this transition, will he try to make a move, solidify his gains before Trump's even in office?
That's the big question, isn't it? And that's the real danger of this whole headless situation. Two powerful figures, Biden and Putin, each with their own agenda, their own timelines. It just increases the risk of miscalculation on both sides. And Putin's already shown he's willing to use force to get what he wants. So yeah, it's a very precarious situation.
It does feel like we're walking a tightrope here. So, what are the potential scenarios we could be looking at over these next 60 days? What's the best case, worst case, and what factors might influence how things unfold?
Okay, well, best case scenario, cooler heads prevail. Biden holds back from any major escalation. The Trump team sends clear signals to Moscow about their intentions, and Putin, seeing that he's unlikely to gain more ground militarily, agrees to a ceasefire. And then some kind of good faith negotiations, maybe that leads to a peaceful resolution that probably involves some tough compromises on both sides.
That sounds like a lot of ifs, though. What about the other end of the spectrum? Worst case scenario, what are we looking at?
Worst case is, well, it's pretty terrifying. Imagine a miscalculation, a provocation, or even just a deliberate escalation by either side that spins out of control. We could see the conflict expand rapidly, maybe even drawing NATO in, direct confrontation between Russia and the West. And we can't forget both sides have nuclear weapons. That adds a whole other level of, well, existential threat to the whole equation.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty bleak. So, what are the key things that will determine which path we go down? What should we be watching for in these next few weeks?
I think a lot hinges on communication, signaling. The Biden administration needs to be clear about their intentions, both to Moscow and to the incoming Trump team. Trump's team needs to signal that they're willing to talk, to engage in diplomacy with Russia, but also that they'll stand firm against any more aggression. And Putin, well, he has to weigh things out. The potential benefits of escalating versus the risks of a much wider conflict. It's a high-stakes game they're playing, and the fate of a lot of people hangs in the balance.
So much depends on these key players, how they navigate this. But what about the others, the EU, NATO? What roles do they play in all of this?
Right, well, remember, Laird argues that the Vance plan, if it actually happens, would basically force Europe to take on more responsibility for their own security. This could be a turning point for the EU, for NATO, a chance to step up, to show they're united, and to figure out a new way forward on European defense.
Almost like a forced evolution, I guess. But we've also seen a lot of division in Europe, right? Some countries are much more hawkish on Russia, others are hesitant to escalate. How do you think those internal dynamics will play out in the next few weeks?
Yeah, those divisions are definitely a worry. Any kind of diplomacy will depend on European leaders finding some common ground, presenting a united front. And that's where countries like, you know, those Nordic states Laird talked about, they become really important.
Those cool heads. Okay, so let's talk about them a bit more. What makes them well suited to try and mediate this crisis?
Well, they have a few things going for them. First off, they've been dealing with Russia for a long time. Both cooperation and competition. They get the complexities, have a more nuanced view than some others. Second, they're boosting their own defenses, gives them credibility on security issues. And then they're generally seen as, I don't know, pragmatic, level-headed, ideal for trying to mediate between opposing sides.
They do seem to have that balance, prepared for the worst, but still aiming for the best possible outcome. But then you have that warning from Laird about the UK bombing Russian territory but cutting defense spending. It's a head scratcher. What message is that supposed to send, and what could happen because of it?
It is a strange strategy. On the one hand, it's escalation, but then they weaken their own military at the same time. That kind of inconsistency, it could make Russia bolder, weaken the West's unity, and just make a peaceful solution even harder to find. It's a textbook example of mixed messaging. And in a situation, this volatile clarity and consistency are absolutely vital.
Yeah, it really shows how even small decisions can have a big impact in a situation like this. Yeah, it really highlights that domino effect. You know, one wrong move and who knows what could happen. But I think it's important to take a step back, look at the bigger picture. Even if we somehow get through these next 60 days without some major disaster, what are the long-term effects of all this? How is this changing the world, regardless of who's president?
It's a question that deserves a lot more attention, that's for sure. I mean, this war has been a catalyst. It's sped up changes that were probably already happening. Alliances are hardening. Countries are focused on military preparedness again, and the global balance of power, that's shifting. We'll be feeling the effects of this for decades, I think.
It's like watching, I don't know, a tectonic shift happening right in front of us. What are some of the ways you see this conflict reshaping things, Europe, the world, in the long term? What should we be prepared for?
Well, I think one thing is pretty clear. We're going to see a much more militarized Europe. Countries all over, they're already increasing defense budgets, rethinking their whole approach to security. The days of relying on the U.S., those are fading. We're seeing a more independent European defense posture emerging.
A real wake-up call for Europe, you could say. They can't just be complacent about security anymore.
Exactly. And this has big implications for NATO, too. This whole conflict, it's really tested them. Their unity, their resolve, it's not clear how they come out of this.
Yeah.
Stronger and more together or weaker and more divided.
Yeah, it does feel like a pivotal moment for NATO. We've seen them rally around Ukraine, providing aid, sanctions on Russia, you know, strengthening their defenses. But like you said, those tensions are there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Disagreements about how much to spend on defense, how much to support Ukraine, how much risk to take with Russia.
It's real, yeah. And we can't just pretend it's not there. Any collective defense, it depends on everyone being on the same page. If NATO can't get past those internal divisions, well, it hurts their credibility, makes them less effective on the world stage.
So a lot riding on NATO. But let's zoom out even further. We talked earlier about Putin being forced to align with other authoritarian regimes.
Yeah.
How do you see that playing out long term? Are we heading toward a new Cold War?
It's possible. It's definitely something we should be concerned about. I mean, we could be seeing this whole new axis forming, authoritarian powers, challenging the world order, trying to remake it to fit their interests.
A world divided by ideology, democracy and freedom versus authoritarianism. It's a scary thought. And hard to see how that wouldn't affect us all.
Oh, it would affect everyone, without a doubt. I mean, it'd be naive to think this conflict and everything that's happening because of it won't have a big impact. We're already seeing the economy take a hit. Energy prices are up. Supply chains are disrupted. Inflation's rising. And all of that, well, it's likely to stick around. Could mean slower growth, lower living standards. But it goes beyond economics. You know, we could see more polarization in our own societies, more debate about foreign policy, defense, what our role in the world even is. And it's not just politics. It's a feeling of insecurity, too. The threat of conflict, the idea of nuclear war, it's looming over everything.
Like a dark cloud hanging over us all. Just this feeling of unease that seeps into everything.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to stay informed, to have these conversations, even if they're tough. And to really think about the choices we're making as individuals, as a society, we can't just sit back and watch this happen. Our future depends on us getting involved, being active.
That's a powerful message and a good place to wrap things up, I think. We've covered a lot today. And I got to be honest, none of it's particularly comforting. But like they say, knowledge is power. And understanding all of this, well, it's the first step to finding solutions. So as you go about your day, keep those questions coming. Stay informed. Think about what role you can play in shaping the future. The stakes are high, but there's always hope. Hope for a more peaceful, more just world.
I couldn't agree more. Thanks for having me. This has been, well, sobering, but definitely a conversation we needed to have.
And thank you to all our listeners for taking this deep dive with us. Until next time, stay curious, stay engaged, and stay hopeful.